case today, U.S. versus Isaacs.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Travis Kennedy, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mark Isaacs. Now, this appeal centers around the government's decision to turn over a new set of CD-ROMs containing some 25,000 pages of data the Friday before the Monday trial date, the date that the case was supposed to proceed, April 21st.
Let me ask you one question at this point.
Sure.
It did not affect the underlying data, though, correct?
Your Honor, the underlying data, according to the government's representation on the first day of trial, is that some data was not viewable completely in the previous format. So they argued to the district court that the new CD-ROMs had to be sent to the jury because the jury would not be able to fully view the data in the format that they had originally turned over to Mr. Isaacs. And secondly, Your Honor, the government represented at the hearing that there was extraneous data, that there was other data that they didn't believe was relevant to be sent to the jury, and that should not proceed, that the old CDs could not be sent for that reason, and therefore they needed to send the new CD-ROM. So the government in this case said there was one set of data that the jury needed to see, but it was okay for Mr. Isaacs to have relied on a previous set of data that had material differences prior to the beginning of trial.
What I'm talking about is the documents that are used to produce the summaries. There was no change in that, was there?
The
underlying documents.
The documents in this case were data sets. They were PIN numbers used. They were phone numbers. They were customer lists. And the government represented that there actually was some, that there was evidence on that first set of CDs that was not going to be used, that was not going to be sent to the jury at actual trial. Now, the government's actions in this case violated Federal Rule of Evidence 1006, because that rule requires that as a prerequisite to the admission of summary exhibits, the underlying records that are used to create the exhibits must be turned over to the opposing party at a reasonable time and place. Now, as I mentioned, the voluminous records in this case involved...
That goes to Judge Van Bocklin's question, what were the changes? I mean, you had that information earlier.
Your Honor, my client did not have his set, and we made efforts to contact previous counsel in this case to find the old CD-ROMs. They did not have a set of those. They were never entered into evidence. They had no place in the trial. When we spoke to the government, they produced one CD that they believed was the old set of CD-ROM, was the old set of records, but it was never clear to us that that was actually the complete set of old records that was turned over to Mr. Isaacs well prior to trial. So because this evidence was never in the record, because this evidence had no part in the trial, there is limited access to the old CD-ROMs that were originally turned over. But there is the representation of the government lawyer at trial that there were differences, and that's the reason they created the new set of CDs. If the old set of CDs were exactly the same, there would have been no reason to create a new set to have PrimeCo go through the process of making new CD-ROMs and then ultimately asking that those be sent to the jury. So in the government's mind in this case, there was some difference that warranted this the turning over of these new CD-ROMs on the eve of trial.
Well, one of the things that was mentioned was they're more readable.
Yes, Your Honor. The government stated that certain files had to be put in a different file format because the old data could not be completely viewed in the previous file format. And this disadvantages Mr. Isaacs because he is preparing for trial using those old set of CD-ROMs. They turn over the new set of CD-ROMs and they represent to the court that, well, this is more readable. This way this has to go to the jury. Mr. Isaacs then asks for a continuance so he can review the new data that he did not have the ability to completely review.
How many trial continuances did he have before this trial started?
Continuances?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. There was numerous. I believe there was something like eight, but they were both caused. Mr. Isaacs had several motions for a continuance, but those were based around problems that he had with previous counsel not adequately preparing for trial. And the government also had motion for continuance to delay the trial date. If anything, what this says is that we were at over 2 years from the date of the original indictment by the time this case was going to go to trial, which means the government had ample time to produce a workable set of records. If anything, previous delays work in favor of Mr. Isaac's argument that there should have been a delay here so he could have been able to review the new set of records.
At trial, were there any objections raised? I know Mr. Isaac represented himself. He had standby counsel.
Yes, sir.
But were there any objections raised when the government offered the summaries into evidence? Were they objected to at that time?
Your Honor, Mr. Isaacs did not have a formal objection at that point, though Mr. Isaacs did, before the trial, motion for a continuance. He did at the time when those exhibits were introduced through Ginny Topfer, who is a witness for PrimeCo. He asked that the new CDs not be sent to the jury as validating, and then he renewed that request at the end of trial that he did not want the new set of records being sent to the jury because he had not had the ability to review them, and he did not feel comfortable having one standard for himself and another standard for the jury. And so he was a pro se litigant, and he did not have a perfect objection to the admission of the summaries. But the principle underlying 1006, the principle that both sides should be entitled adequate time to review the records, that principle was embodied by Mr. Isaacs multiple times in trial, and there were motions in limine filed that tried to ensure the government would comply with Rule 1006. So there had been ample notice to the court about the 1006 argument.
But he was a pro se litigant by his own choosing, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. He decided to proceed pro se when he received the government's witness list prior to trial, and there had been some changes that he did not feel his attorney would be ready to.
He wanted to cross-examine his former co-defendant.
Yes, Your Honor.
For some reason.
Yes, Your Honor.
How would having those records in what you would say would be a timely fashion have benefited him?
Your Honor, he could have reviewed those records to ensure that the summary exhibits were completely accurate, that he could have used those to prepare for cross-examination of the witnesses that presented them. But furthermore, he wouldn't have had to use his very limited time that when he actually got the records turned over trying to review the records. Remember, these are turned over on the Friday before the Monday trial date. So now, instead of being able to spend that weekend reviewing his opening statement, his closing statement, cross-examinations, direct examinations, he's spending all his time trying to review the records, or at least that's the dilemma he faces, right? He has to choose one or the other. And the district court's action here basically promotes strategic behavior by litigants whereby they drop off new records.
I think it may have discouraged strategic behavior. He didn't get a continuance.
Well, Your Honor, but the strategic behavior here would be on the part of a party turning over new records. Mr. Isaacs had wanted to proceed to trial.
Apparently the district judge believed the government, saying that there was no difference between the tapes before, except they had eliminated some that was not admissible or extraneous material and made it more readable.
Yes, Your Honor, but the district court conducted no fact-finding to make sure that the two sets of records were the same. The district court did not ask to go back to chambers and review the CD-ROMs. The fact-finding in this case involved...
Let me interrupt you. I gather you said this earlier, I think. You were not able to get a copy of the earlier...
I do not believe we were able to get a full copy of the previous set of CD-ROM records. There was a large amount of data in this case. But
that wasn't raised in the motion continuance, though, that you couldn't get it from the former attorneys.
The motion for a continuance was that the records had not been, that Mr. Isaacs required the time to review the records. That was the motion that he filed on the eve of trial.
After the trial was concluded, at some point thereafter, has Mr. Isaacs ever advised the court of any discrepancies he found subsequent?
No, Mr. Isaacs has in a federal prison and has not conducted any, he has not conducted any further investigation or analysis of the records. Therefore, I respectfully request this court to reverse Mr. Isaac's conviction for access device fraud. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Jason Yonan. I'm appearing today on behalf of the United States. I'd like to get directly to the issue that Your Honors were discussing, and that's the differences between the two sets of the CDs. Initially, the government made a production during discovery in this case of information, all the information that was provided to it by PrimeCo. Obviously, the government doesn't limit that production to what's going to be admissible into evidence at trial. The original set of CDs contained other information that would not have been admissible at trial and was extraneous to the underlying data that was used to support the summary exhibits in this case. The CDs that were produced just prior to trial were essentially redacted versions of the underlying CDs that were produced during discovery in this case. The underlying data that was removed was not related to the underlying data supporting the summary exhibits. As the government was going through the old sets of CDs to produce the redacted versions, it noticed that one set of the data that related to the PrimeCo Actives database, which is essentially the list of PrimeCo customers.
And you tendered, why were you redacting? I mean, was that your voluntary effort to redact? You weren't requested to do that by the judge?
No, Your Honor. It was the government's position that it couldn't have been admitted because the defendant was choosing...
That's all I want to know. It's your idea. You weren't...
It was, Your Honor. It was the government that was redacting. It was the government's idea to redact the information. It wasn't directed by the district court. The information on the redacted CDs was the same. During the time that they were working through to redact that information, they became aware that a portion of the data, as it related to the PrimeCo Access database, which is PrimeCo's list of customers, was not entirely readable. Essentially, it was opening in an Excel database, and it was too large a volume of data to completely open in an Excel database. They transferred that to a Microsoft Access database so it could be completely readable. The defendant claims, as a result, that they weren't provided all the information required to them under Rule 1006. Now, I think there's really three responses to that. The first is the government produced the information initially during discovery as it was produced to the government. PrimeCo produced it to the government. It was produced to the defendant. So it's not an issue of the government having access to information the defendant doesn't. The second is it was the defendant who represented to the district court that he had looked through the underlying data and he had compared it to the summary reports. The defendant never made the claim that he was not able to access any of the information that was contained in the underlying data, and that cuts against his suggestion to the district court that he had diligently prepared using the old versions of CDs. I think the third point is, if you look at page 6 of the government's brief, which has a snapshot of the summary data, that information only relates to one column, the PrimeCo name column. And the evidence at trial, none of the documentary evidence that linked the defendant to the scheme in this case came from the PrimeCo name column. Instead, the testimony was that defendant's business address, business telephone number, was used during the scheme, and that came from a different section of the summary report, and also that his own account was credited over a certain period of time during the scheme. Again, there's no question that underlying data was provided to the defendant. The only question that relates to the underlying data not being entirely readable relates to one column, which was not used by the government to link the defendant to the scheme. Now, counsel mentioned there was some confusion about them obtaining the correct version of the underlying data. But the fact of the matter is the defendant was on bond in this case. He had the old versions of the CDs, and he had the new versions of the CDs. He also had 30 days within which to file a post-trial motion. There's never been anything portrayed to the district court of any material difference between those two sets of CDs. Now, whether or not those are in the record on appeal or whether or not counsel has those, the defendant had those after trial. He had them for 30 days after trial, and he was out on bond. He could have done exactly what he was asking for, is to look through and find material differences in the two sets, and he did not do so. And that really goes to the district court really, in this case, did not abuse its discretion in its handling of this issue, both in denying the motion to continue trial and both in the admission of the underlying exhibits pursuant to 1006. The district court was well within its discretion to rely on the government's representation in this case that this was merely redacted versions of CDs, removing extraneous information, removing inadmissible information, so that it could go back to the jury to be considered. as Your Honors have mentioned, the district court was particularly within its discretion based on the number of times trial had been delayed in this case. There had been approximately 8 trial continuances in this case. 4 of them were on the motion of the defendant, particularly several of them similar to this shortly before the trial itself began. So the district court was well within its discretion in denying the motion, relying on the government's representation. But in fact, the district court went even further and said that the defendant could rely on the old versions of the CDs to cross-examine the government's witness in this case, Ginny Topher, who would be authenticating and testifying about the summary reports. So to the extent it's the defendant's argument that his preparation was affected, that's simply not the case. He could use the underlying data, the CDs that were previously produced, that he purportedly relied on and reviewed to cross-examine the government's witness in this case, Ginny Topher. The only thing that only difference in the district court's ruling was that those old CDs could not go back to the jury because they contained extraneous and inadmissible information. Unless the court has any other questions, I would ask you to affirm the sentence and conviction.
I have one question.
Sure.
Had all discovery, not talking about these summaries right now and the change you made, had all the documentary documents that the underlying basis for the summaries, there's some indication those were produced by 2006. Is that correct?
It was produced, I believe, in 2006 during discovery. Correct.
Okay. So the defendant had those documents. The issue we're talking about is the change in the readability of the summaries.
He had the documents, and in fact, that's what he's saying that he's reviewed. He's saying he wants to use the old version that was produced in 2006 because he's purportedly reviewed that underlying data and compared it to the summary reports. That's his claim, is he would rather use these old versions that were produced during discovery and not the new versions that the government has produced, essentially because he's saying, I can't trust the government, and I don't believe that it's the representation that it's the same. Are there further questions?
Thank you,
Your Honor.
How much time? You have 1 minute for your rebuttal.
May it please the Court, I just have a few issues I want to touch on briefly. First, the government represented that some of the data was not completely viewable, and then they said that Mr. Isaacs had not objected to such data at trial. But if some data isn't completely viewable, or it isn't viewable at all, which is not completely clear, then Mr. Isaacs had no ability to even know in the first place what to object to. And secondly, Rule 1006 requires the government, or any party, excuse me, that is seeking to introduce summaries to produce a complete set of data. The burden is on the party seeking to introduce the evidence, not on the party receiving the evidence, and there's a burden shifting that occurs with the government's argument. Furthermore, the problem with the government's approach in terms of what happened after trial is that it creates a very difficult situation for a party who's convicted to try to go through a new set of records and then see if there are discrepancies and then see if those discrepancies would have been relevant to the trial, because the witnesses at trial are where the evidence would have been the defendant would have had the ability to actually cross-examine those witnesses with, and he cannot do that after trial. So therefore, I ask respectfully that you reverse Mr. Isaac's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. And again, thanks to the Legal Aid Clinic at the University of Chicago for your nice representation. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.